Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I bring to the fore people who are really at the cutting edge, who are evolving our consciousness, who are discovering new things about the nature of reality and who we are as human beings. And tonight is another in the series of my investigations into the UFO alien craft mysteries that seem to be around the planet for the last 60 or so years. And tonight I have a very exciting guest. I mean, I'm very excited about tonight's guest who I never thought I'd actually talk to. He's Jesse Marcel Jr. He is the son of Jesse Marcel, who found the wreckage at Roswell in 1947, and he's just written a book called The Roswell Legacy. Jess, are you there?
I am here.
Yeah, everyone's heard of Roswell, but we'll just go back to that day in 1947. But just before we get there, you were 11 then, and now you've just written the book now, almost 60 years later. What took you so long to come out about what happened?
Well, you know, I'd always wanted to write a book about this, and but you know, I kept, you know, procrastination being what it is, and always busy with everything else. But as time went on, I thought, you know, I better get off the stick here and write this thing, because I'm no spring chicken anymore. So who knows what time is going to do? So yeah, I thought it's time. So I want to get it down in print before I still could, so to speak.
Well, this thing, this Roswell event, 1940, has haunted you or stayed with you from the time you were 11 to the time you're like 72 now?
Yes, Well, it's always been in the back of my mind. You know, it hasn't haunted me, but you know, I always recognized the reality of the situation and didn't bother my life anyway. It didn't change my method of living or religious feelings or anything like that, but it's always been there, yes.
But there's been like probably, you know, 200 books out about Roswell. It's sort of a Roswell industry.
yeah, sure is.
And so I appreciate you coming out. So your father was the person who found the wreckage?
It was found by the rancher, you know, by the foreman of the ranch, Mac Brazel. And he's the one who contacted the sheriff, who then contacted the base commander, Colonel Blanchard, in Roswell Army Airfield, who sent my dad out there. So in reality, it was found by the rancher, but my dad and a CIC agent, Sheridan Cabot, are the ones who went out there to do the initial investigation on this.
So your father went out there, and the rancher collected. How much wreckage did the rancher actually collect at the time?
Well, you know, I'm not sure, but to hear my dad talk about it, the wreckage covered a considerable area there. You know, I'm not sure of the exact dimension, but he described it several hundred yards by 1,000 yards, or you know, measurements along that line. So there's a considerable amount of debris scattered about.
What was the rancher's name?
Mac Brazel, Brazel.
Oh, I see. I see. And what happened to him? What happened to Mac?
Well, you know, I know that he was brought into town, too, and debriefed on this. And after that, he never wanted to talk about it again. So they debriefed him to the point where he said, I'm not going to ever talk about this again. And that's the way it stood.
So it was a big... Yeah, I mean, it was a big sensation, but then it was sort of the whole Roswell thing was sort of lost for like 20 years. It just sort of disappeared, and was it Stanton Friedman who brought it back into public awareness? How did it come back into awareness?
Well, you know, what happened is that, you know, my dad flew up a portion of the wreckage to the air base at Fort Worth, you know, uh-huh. where our General Ramey was located. He was the 8th Air Force commander, and he looked at that, and there's famous pictures of some balloon wreckage scattered on General Ramey's floor. But at any rate, that was not what I saw. But you know, my dad at that point was told never to talk about this again. As a matter of fact, make sure members of his family never disclosed what they know about this either. So when he came back from Fort Worth, he sat my mother and myself down and said, we're never to discuss this issue again. And that's where it stayed for many, many years. As a matter of fact, even in the family, we did not discuss it with each other. And even after I left the house, you know, went to school and all that, and in the military, we never really discussed this.
You talk about those pictures of your father holding the balloon wreckage, and you're absolutely right. In the book, you say, I mean, and the picture and the expression on his face is, are you serious? This is not, this is not what I showed. This is not what I found, right?
Yeah, you know, I couldn't help but laugh when I saw those pictures. That's just such a poor representation of what the debris looked like. I mean, what that debris on General Ramey's floor was the real wreckage of a weather balloon with its radar targets. As a matter of fact, in one shot, you could see a balloon envelope in the background. But this, you know, this was not the debris that that my dad brought into the house that night before all this happened.
Right, and there's this incredible smirk on his face, and he's looking up, and he's like,
"You gotta be kidding!"
Exactly, that's what I thought. Even before reading your book, it's like I thought that same thing. You know,
it's funny, but that was where the cover up started. As a matter of fact, my dad, being a good soldier, went along with the cover up.
Well, so what? But before we get into the cover up and everything, what exactly did your father bring into the house? Just so everyone hears it, what did you see and feel?
Okay, well, you know, when he came in from the field from the ranch, you know, our house happened to be on the way to the air base, and even though it was late at night, maybe early in the hours in the morning, my dad realized the significance of this discovery, so he wanted myself and my mother to see this. Because in his words, we'll never see this again, which is true. So what he did, he brought this debris into the house, into the kitchen, as a matter of fact, and spread representative portions of the debris on the floor. Then he went and got myself and my mother up to come look at this and just look at it.
So what was it that you, what did he spread it? What was it look like?
Well, okay, there was a lot of foil-like material there, almost like an aluminum wrap type thing, but there's a lot of that, and it was not paperbacked or anything like that, like the foil on one of these balloon targets, but it was just like foil, and, you know, very light, very kind of tough consistency, although I did not try to bend it or tear it like other people tried, but from my aspect, the most unusual part of this was the beams with the writing or the symbols on it.
What kind of symbols? Because I don't think you put that in your book, the symbols, did you?
Oh, yeah, they're in there. It's in the...
They are?
They resembled to me was Egyptian hieroglyphics, and they had a kind of a peculiar color, purple-violet sheen to it, which was semi-reflective. But at first, they were like Egyptian hieroglyphics, but closer inspection revealed it not to be so, but more like geometric symbols forms of geometric symbols.
But there were no solid pieces of the craft itself?
Well, there's the beam. They were solid enough.
Oh,
beam. And there was some, you know, the beams that the writing was on.
How big were those?
Well, they're 12 to 18 inches long, and there were several of them. I didn't look at all of them, as a matter of fact, but just looked at the representative sampling of it. And there's also some black plastic debris that looked almost like a broken photograph record of the time. Looking well, like Bakelite, I guess. And there's copious amounts of all this wreckage. And, you know, again, you know, to go back into the story, my dad first wanted us to look for any electronic debris, you know, like vacuum tubes, resistors, and things like that. But he already knew there was, but he wanted us to satisfy our curiosity. But there was no electronic components to this.
Mm. So how much time did you actually spend with the debris that night?
Well, yeah, probably about 15 or 20 minutes, but it was... unique enough that the memory of it has stuck with me all these years.
Wow. So how big would you say the ship could have been based on the debris that your father...
I have no idea, but, you know, as a matter of fact, I think, you know, the way the story is unfolding or has unfolded is that there might have been two areas where the debris came down. There's the debris field that my dad was associated with, but the craft itself might have come down some distance away, but my dad never had any knowledge of that, but other people saw that.
Besides that, people have now said that there were bodies, there was one live alien. Do you know anything about that?
Well, you know, not at the time, but only what I've read in the papers about this thing, but apparently there were some crew members located at the site number two where the main body of the craft was. Again, my dad was not associated with that, and I don't think he ever saw anything as exotic as the bodies, but because I think he would eventually have told me, but who knows. But if there were bodies there, that's where they were located.
Oh, I see. And nothing, you don't know anything about the possible live alien that's this nurse that just kind of came forward?
No, I have no knowledge about that. The only thing I know about, no personal knowledge, all I know about that is what I've read in other investigators' stories.
So your father, he showed you this and he was really excited. Did he say anything like, hey, this is the remains of a UFO flying saucer? Did he say that to you?
Well, he's very excited, and I think he did use words like, this is parts of a flying saucer. At the time, I wasn't quite sure what a flying saucer was, but sure found out about it shortly thereafter. But, yeah, he's very excited, and I think he used words certainly describing what he thought was a flying saucer, parts of a flying saucer.
So at the time, you grew up in Roswell then, basically,
mm-hmm.
right? And at the time, there was lots of media that came out. There were the front page of the Roswell paper that said UFO.
Yeah, I guess that was the next day or so. But being a kid, 11 years old, I was not interested in the papers or news hype at that time. I was more interested in doing bicycling and playing with my friends, my school friends at that time.
Uh-huh. So was this, I mean, it must have stuck around. I mean, you went to high school in Roswell, right?
No, actually, what happened, that was 1947. Not too long after that, my dad was then stationed in Washington, D.C. So we moved to Washington after all this came about, and then my dad finally got out of the military in about 1950 or so. But that was when he was stationed in Washington.
And he never, after he came back and said you never mentioned it again, he never mentioned the whole thing again.
Not any, just kind of a wink-wink kind of thing. We never really went into any discussion about that. That didn't happen until Stan Friedman got wind of the story in 1978.
And what happened when Stan and Friedman got wind of the story?
Well, apparently, my dad was kind of loosening up a little bit about this because he must have said something to one of his ham buddies in Baton Rouge about a flying saucer crash in Roswell in 1947. And Stan Friedman was giving a lecture in Baton Rouge, and this ham radio guy was in the audience, and he told Stan about my dad, saying that, you ought to talk to Jesse Marcel about this in Homa, because he knows a lot about flying saucers, or he has some personal knowledge of a flying saucer. So Stan then went down to Homa and then looked up my dad, and that's where the story came out.
So that it was really Stan and Friedman talking to your father that broke the whole Roswell thing wide open, huh?
That's right. Had it not been for that, it would have stayed undercover.
And now there's like a Roswell celebration. Thousands of people every year reach.
Well, it's a huge industry there.
Have you been to one of those Roswell celebrations?
Yeah, I have, and they're kind of fun. You see all kind of strange-looking, exotic people there with all costumes and aliens, and they made a circus out of it.
Right, but
great for the Chamber of Commerce.
But just before we get into the whole alien thing, I mean, why didn't any of these other people who've now come forth? What's that guy Haupt, who just signed an affidavit? He didn't come forth until Stanton Friedman broke the whole thing open, either. Right.
That's right.
And why were they? Were they all waiting for this to happen? Or
I think they're good soldiers. They're obeying orders not to talk about this. But once the story broke, they thought, no harm in talking about it now. So that's when they started coming forth with this.
But have you been bothered by the government about talking about this now?
No.
So no problem with you right now?
No problem at all.
But what do you think is happening in the government? Because obviously there's still cover-ups going on. There was that thing that happened in Texas recently, that huge craft, and they denied it. The government, the Air Force said no, and then they said, there were planes. I mean, what do you think is going on with the government?
Well, I don't know. I wish I knew, because I think most people would accept the truth of this thing. without any panic. You know, I don't think it'd be like the War of the Worlds broad radio broadcast back in the 1935, 36. I don't think there'd be panic now about this because we're sending our own UFOs out to other planets, as a matter of fact. So I don't know what their problem is with releasing this to the public. I think it'd be a great thing to do to let people know that we're not alone, that there's other civilizations out there, and more than that, they've been there, they've been here.
Right. Now, so you definitely believe there's life out there. There's no doubt, because I guess you...
Not a doubt in my mind.
Have you had any sightings yourself?
No, I have not had any personal sightings. No, it's a strange thing, but I've seen some strange lights in the sky, but what's light in the sky doesn't mean anything.
Wow.
So, no, I've never really have seen anything that I could say was a definite UFO or some sort of strange-looking craft.
The other thing, what did your mother think of the whole thing?
Well, she was a housewife of the 40s. You know, she used to stay quiet. But, after I left the house, maybe my mom and my dad talked about it amongst themselves, but I was no longer around to be part of the conversation. But she never really talked much about it either. Because we were both told never to talk about it.
Do you think, though, there's a slow release process that's happening from the government to slowly bring people into awareness of this?
Well, I think there might be like a dripping, slow drip of information. And once it reaches a critical mass, that's when the story will come out.
Right. Well, did you ever work for the government or the Army? Were you in the Army yourself?
Yeah, I spent many, many years in the Army. As a matter of fact, I just retired from the Army in 2005 after being in Iraq for 13 months.
In Iraq? Uh-huh. Has there been any strange sightings by people in Iraq or any place
Not that I know of. I spent most of my time flying in a Black Hawk helicopter. And again, talking about a light in the sky, I remember one night we were flying back from Kirkwood into Balad. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I saw a light in the sky, and I knew that there was no civilian aircraft because it was certainly a no-fly zone, but it was a well-lit aircraft, a bright light, traveling from south to north, and no one knew what it was.
Because I see lights, too. It sounds like it could have been a craft, actually.
Yeah. Who knows what it was, but there's no military. As a matter of fact, I was the only military craft out there, and there are no civilian craft, so who knows what it was, and it was too late to be a satellite to have visualization. But,
light
in the sky, what?
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Just the light in the sky doesn't mean anything.
But I was going to ask you, are you interested in the whole UFO, ET phenomenon? Have you been following it, the whole alien abduction thing?
Well, I do have a mild interest in this thing because I know what's out there, and I like to read Stanton Friedman's books about this because I think they're pretty factual, and I like to read some of the noted authorities on this. Their books.
I mean, have you read John Mack and Bud Hopkins?
I know. Yes, I have. Yeah. But I don't make it. It's not a hobby with me. It doesn't occupy my time, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
A secondary interest in it.
But you did fly helicopters. Any association between that as a young boy wanting to fly helicopters?
Well, when I got in the military, I went to I was a flight surgeon. So at that time, they taught flight surgeons how to fly helicopters. So I got my stick time there. I didn't. I flew in Black Hawks, but I didn't fly them as such. But I was like a crew member of a Black Hawk.
So if there's stuff out there, and there is, and Roswell is really an epicenter of this modern phenomena. How do you think if we came out that this really is happening? What would happen to our civilization as we know it? What do you think it would go on?
I mean, if the whole story was divulged to the people?
Yeah, like said, if the government came forth and said, you know what? There was a ship at Roswell that crashed, and
I think NASA has already conducted some studies on what would happen, not if, but when their story is released. And the truth of the matter is, people won't really be panic-stricken. They won't be too involved or too bothered by it. The only ones that they felt that might be bothered by it would be the real right-wing religious groups. They might be very.
But then again, the church, just the Roman Catholic Church, just came out with a statement saying, you know, the Vatican recognizes that there could be other beings out there.
I'm a Roman Catholic myself, and knowing what I know about this has actually strengthened my faith.
In what way? Can you talk about that?
Well, because I realize that God is great, you know, so to speak. Allah Akbar. He's big enough to build more than just us, but we have brothers out there too, other civilizations.
But what about Jesus? Where does he fit into other civilizations, other planets?
Well, I don't know. That's a good mystery. I don't know whether there are other Jesus Christ in other civilizations. I suspect there was.
But you don't think we have anything... I mean, I don't think we have anything to fear from these aliens. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think if we had something that they wanted, we wouldn't have it now. We probably wouldn't be here ourselves. So, no, I don't think we have anything to fear from. Although I'm sure there's different civilizations, you know, different types. You know, maybe there are some bad actors out there, but hopefully they won't bother us. But because I think the ones that are here, like in Roswell or whatever... I think that was more like on a scientific investigation there, kind of investigating primitive civilizations.
You don't think they've been here for hundreds of thousands of years? You think it was a kind of recent phenomena?
Oh, no, I think they've been here for thousands of years, for millennia.
Someone told me, I heard somewhere, that they thought that the Roswell crash was something that was shot down by Army bases in Roswell with a new type of technology they had in the 47?
Yeah, you know, I have no knowledge of that, but I doubt that very severely. I don't think that's what happened to it.
Well, why would a ship crash, you know?
Well, you know, this might have been just a probe, so to speak. It could have been manned with clones, which are expendable. I like to talk about a mothership. Maybe this is just a probe dispatched by a mothership. Came down to just to get the lay of the land, so to speak, and it met with grief in the countryside there.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was interesting. The Army just came out, like, I think it was only like 10 years ago, saying, hey, it was a weather balloon. You know, it seems they keep coming out and lying about this thing.
Well, you know, the first thing was, oh, it was a weather balloon, because, you know, obviously there's some tin foil and some kite sticks and things like that. But then they finally changed their story and said, well, okay, we'll fess up. It wasn't a weather balloon, it was a mogul balloon, which was a top secret device at that time.
What was that?
A mogul balloon was something that was designed to lift microphones up into the stratosphere to listen for sonic vibrations from any potential nuclear blast from the Soviet Union. And so it would have been a top secret experiment there. However, the materials were still off the shelf. Materials were not classified, but the mission was classified.
So your father found this balloon, and where was it taken? He just stopped by your house on the way back from the rancher, and then where did he take the material to?
Well, initially, you know, he took it, after we examined it in our home there, I helped him package it up and put it in boxes back in the car. We had a 1942 Buick at the time. And I went to bed, so I don't know if he went to the airbase that night or early the next morning, but I didn't see him until after he came back from Fort Worth. But what he did, he brought the material into the base so that Colonel Blanchard could also look at it. Colonel Blanchard realized the uniqueness of this, and he's the one who... thought that General Rainey, the 8th Air Force commander, should look at this too. And that's when it was flown to Fort Worth Army Airfield in a B-29, under armed guard, I might add.
When did the story come out? I mean, someone must have released the story that before, like, the cover-up started, found...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. At the time, Walter Howe was a public information officer there at the base. And what Colonel Blanchard did, he directed that Walter Hout write a story about the Air Force now has a flying saucer or a disc in its possession. And that was released to the papers before it was determined this should be kept top secret.
Oh, so that's where the Walter Haug affidavit comes in now.
That's right, and then after they determined it was top secret, they put out another press release saying that, well, sorry, there was no flying saucer there, just a big mix-up, you know, idiot people, you know, confusing things. But you know, first Walter did release this to the papers, and then after they determined what they really had on their hands, they thought, well, we better keep this covered up, and that's when the cover-up story was then released to the press that this was just a weather balloon.
So did you read the Walter Haug affidavit before, you know, when it came out?
No, I've read parts of it, but I haven't really studied it.
So Walter Haug, though, he must have maybe felt guilty, or why would he come out, you know, years later with this affidavit that, hey, you know, it was a saucer?
Well, you know, he was dying at the time, so I guess he decided that he better get this thing down on paper while he still could do it.
That's my feeling. I mean, it's you know, Roswell has become like a myth, a legend almost, you know?
Well, it is. It's been thoroughly studied, that's for sure.
And like I meet people like David Jacobs, you know his work, he said it, no, it never happened, you know? Mm-hmm. I wonder, why would he say that?
I don't, you know, I have no idea. Everybody has their own agenda, but I know what was out there.
Yeah.
I saw it.
So your father took it somewhere. Then this stuff must be someplace right now, right?
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure they didn't take it to a dumpster and to get rid of it. I'd heard that maybe it was taken to Wright Field at Wright-Patterson Air Force Station, Dayton, Ohio. And
uh-huh.
Who knows where it is?
Well, there must be a whole branch of government that's in charge of this. Of this UFO cover-up that has video footage and probably other parts of other crafts. I mean, it's huge, the cover-up, isn't it?
Well, I was interviewed by a member of the government who really confided to me that this was not, Roswell was not fiction. And I told him I know it wasn't. And he asked me, what did I know about it? And I went ahead and told him my story. And then he asked me, where did I think the material was myself? And I said, well, I don't know. You guys have it. And he said, no, we don't have it. We don't know where it is, or at least who has in charge of it. They're looking for people who might have knowledge of this thing.
Wait, what branch of the government was this guy from who talked to you?
He identified himself as being with the CIA or NSC, something of that nature. I'm not sure which. But he asked me some questions like, had I ever been threatened not to talk about this, which I hadn't. And he just simply wanted to know what I knew about this, and he did say that this was not fiction, and I agreed with him, it's not fiction.
And what year was that?
That was about 1990 or 91.
90 or 91, it was years before this book even came out.
Yeah.
I wonder why they would, something sounds a little strange, they're asking you where the wreckage
is,
you...
I don't know why you asked me. How would I know where it is? I figured they had it. But
did you get this guy's name?
I did, but I'm not really too free to divulge it.
No, you don't have to divulge it, but I mean, he's a real person who works for the government.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, he gave me his telephone number at the Capitol building to get back in touch with him in case I ever got any threatening phone calls or anything like that, which I never did get any.
Well, these are the guys that would give you a threatening phone call. I mean, it's probably people from his office. Has he called you since then?
No, that was my one and only contact with him.
That is odd. There's something weird going on there. I wonder where that guy is now.
I'm sure he's retired by now, but I don't know.
I mean, someone like that, I'm sure, he's just probably kind of like seeing what you know about it and kind of playing dumb, it sounds like, you know?
Yeah, he asked me, did I want to be interviewed in a secure room? And I said, well, I'm not going to say anything I haven't said to other people already. And he said, but I might tell you something, so we'll go to a secure room. So that's where we went.
And he didn't tell you anything except that
other than that, he said this was not fiction.
And you didn't ask him, well, if it's not fiction, why? How do you know? You didn't ask him that.
I asked him, well, what, I asked him, well, when were you guys going to let people know about this? And he said, if it was up to him, it would have been yesterday. But that was not, and he wasn't in the decision-making process.
Did he say who was?
No, I think they were trying to find out who has control of it. And they're gathering people like me, and who had a personal knowledge of this, just see what we knew, just compare notes.
But, I mean, this guy probably knew who did have control of releasing this information, right?
Well, yeah, he said there's a black government, and these were his words, that is not elected, has unlimited funds, answers to no one but itself, and he said those are the ones who have this.
And did he name any name? Who's the head of that black government?
No, nothing like that.
I mean, who do you think is in charge of this secret government?
you tell me, we'll both know.
I believe there are secret
government involved with this thing. It's not under any political control or, I think for national security, it kind of stays to itself.
I mean, isn't it incredible that we could live in a country where, everyone's so unconscious about this type of thing?
Well, that's right. So, but I'm sure it's real. It's a real thing.
I mean, but it brings into suspect the whole reason we were in Iraq and everything. I mean, how do you reconcile, those two things? You fought for your country, yet you're aware that there's forces that run this country that,
Well, I saw what was going on in Iraq, and I support the mission.
What is the mission there? Not to get too political, what is the mission in Iraq?
Well, some of the missions that I flew on were down to the mass graves south of Baghdad. And when you see that, you realize they're no longer being filled by this Saddam Hussein. So we stopped that from happening. It's like the Holocaust in Germany in the 30s. So we stopped that. So that's why I saw that with my conscience. It's no longer
there was
going
mass
on.
Graves that Saddam Hussein just killed millions, lots of thousands of people.
Baby clothes, things like that on the outside of this thing. And as a matter of fact, one horrible story was that in one of those graves there was a mother holding her infant, both shot in the head. The infant still had the pacifier in its mouth. So, that kind of bull is no longer happening right now, and we stopped it.
Well, that's good, but that is good, but war continues for too long.
War is horrible.
It is. The U.S. has been accused of killing innocent people as well.
I've not seen that, but I've seen what these suicide bombers do. And if you want to get an education as to how evil people are, when you see one of those detonate themselves in a crowd, well, then you know how bad it really is.
Did you see that? You saw a suicide bomber?
Yeah.
And you saw him blow up himself in a crowd?
Well, it was just outside our gate there at Balad. A suicide bomber blew himself up, and I had to be there. And so anyway, it's a terrible thing.
Well, I do agree with you saying if people are committing awful atrocities like that, but I mean the fact that we have the shadow government and that we're involved in a war, which is really, I think, more about oil and other. I mean, of course, it's about helping people who are in trouble, but
I'm not sure the shadow government has much to do with Iraq, but I don't, again, I'm not in the need to know on this thing, so.
You're not in the what? You said need to know?
In the need to know about that or any personal knowledge of it.
I mean, it just seems like they would have control over everything, it's just frightening to think that, something else is going on.
I'll tell you what, if we knew all the ins and outs of the government, we might be kind of scared. But anyway, the government has survived, and the United States has survived for several hundred years, and I think we're going to keep on.
No, I agree with you, and I think it's a great country. It's just like when you when you talk about this shadow government who's not, who's never elected, who doesn't have to answer to everyone, it's like, I think they must be running the show, right?
Well, you know, who knows what, you know, what their sphere of influence is. It may be just a very small government that has to do with flying saucers. Maybe that's their only mission. Who knows?
Well, do you think the whole Area 51 thing, you're taking these flying, you think they might be reverse engineering some of this stuff they found?
It's kind of fun to think about that, but I think, you know, maybe these things are, my personal feeling is these craft are so complicated that we may not have the technology to reverse engineer much of it, maybe just very superficially. It'd almost be like giving a digital wristwatch to Galileo and telling him to reproduce it. I don't think he could do it. Or Leonardo da Vinci.
Right. No, I do know what you're saying. I always thought the reverse engineering thing was a little suspect anyway.
Yeah, maybe there is, maybe very superficially, but again, you know, that's just my thoughts.
Well, you didn't see anything like energy weapons that in Iraq or anything like that that may be the result of aliens?
No, that's machine guns and sidearms. That was, you know, that was my, that's the only weapons I saw in action.
Well, because on 60 Minutes a few months ago, they did do a demonstration of these energy weapons.
Yeah, I didn't see anything like that myself. Like I said, we didn't carry them on our Black Hawks.
Right, so...
Well, yeah, them 60 machine guns.
But so you only had that one incident where someone from the government came and talked to you, huh?
Yeah, that's right. That's it. Well, I've had the Air Force, when they were compiling their Roswell case closed monograph, they did interview me, and they asked me what I saw, and I went through the story again, and I described what all I saw and what I thought it was, and their conclusion was they don't know what I saw. So my interview was not included in their monograph.
what was the
Air Force was doing what? Well, what they were doing, I was in my office practice here in Helena. And my secretary got a call from the Lieutenant McAndrew in the Air Force, and he says, when I got on the phone with him, horn with me, he says, "Well, Colonel, we need your help." I said, "Well, yes, Lieutenant, what can I do for you?" And he says, "I understand that you saw things at Roswell. Describe what you saw." So I did. I went through the shopping list of what I saw, and as a matter of fact, I thought maybe this black plastic material might have been from the part of a weather balloon, and I said, "Do you think it was?" And he said, "No, because they didn't carry anything like that." And his final conclusion was, "We don't know what you saw."
Huh. So this went into which report for the airport?
Well, years ago they wrote this monograph, Roswell Case Closed.
What year was that?
Oh, it must be in the early 90s.
So they wrote, they keep going back to Roswell, the Air Force?
I mean, thanks, they don't protest too much. But
exactly.
They're trying to kill the story. Still trying to kill the story, but...
Isn't that strange? You know, they denied it in the 40s, and then, I guess, again in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So in the early 90s, they wrote another report that said, we don't know what happened there. What was their conclusion, actually, about Roswell?
That it was a mogul balloon. That's their conclusion. It was a mogul balloon, but I know it wasn't. But anyway, that's their take on this thing. They put out this expensive monograph, which is trying to convince people that Roswell was just a misidentification of a known object and this, that, and the other. But again, I saw what it was, and it wasn't a mogul balloon or any debris from a mogul balloon.
Do you know what a mogul balloon would look like, though?
I've seen pictures of them. Yeah.
How do you know it wasn't a mogul balloon?
As a matter of fact, when I was going down to Roswell one time, I got a phone call saying that I was supposed to stop off in Socorro, New Mexico, where Bill Moore, he is the project manager of Mogul. And so I stopped in with the family in Socorro, and Bill and Professor Moore brought a mogul balloon target over to my motel room so I could look at it. And I recognized what it was. It's a multiple, Rowan radar target. But I said, you know, this still is not what I saw. And he said, well, I can't tell you what, but we agreed to disagree on this thing.
But just describe what a Mogul balloon would be.
Well, okay, it's like a kite-like thing with a aluminum radar reflector, corner reflector. It's aluminum with paper backing on it to give a structural rigidity with kite sticks. You know, it's a kite-like affair. It's a corner reflector for a radar.
And the material that you felt, there was nothing like they have in a Mogul balloon.
No, I was not that.
Huh. So, and when did your father die? You know, what year was that?
In 1986.
And he never came out and publicly and said anything?
Well, I've seen him on televised interviews. As a matter of fact, before he died, he was... one of the television stations in New Orleans flew him out to Roswell, to the debris field where it was. And I saw videotapes of him walking out there just kind of looking at the ground and kicking the dirt, so to speak. And you know, one of my last conversations with him was, I asked him, you know, you got back from Roswell. I said, was any of the wreckage still out there? And his words were, oh, no, they vacuumed. And those were his words. They vacuumed the place up, making sure there's nothing left.
Wow.
So we're not talking about a radar target.
Wow. Well, what do you think about Colonel Corso's book, The Day After Roswell? And, you know?
Well, you know, he's primarily involved with back engineering. I guess that was the main thesis of his book. And, again, you know, I'm not sure. I haven't really read the book, but that was my understanding. It's based on back engineering and some of the.
I mean, he was quite a high general, though, right? Up in the.
I think he was lieutenant colonel at the time.
That's pretty high, right? And then Senator Storm Thurmond wrote the foreword to the first edition.
Is that right? Yeah.
But he didn't know what he was writing, and he was just kind of supporting Corso mm-hmm. As a colonel, you know?
Sure. I can understand that.
So I mean, there's all this stuff. I mean, actually, in Corso's book, there's pictures of your father, I think.
Is that right? Well, yeah, my wife bought the book, but yeah, I never got around to reading it. That just shows
maybe
you.
Maybe there's not pictures of him. There's a lot of pictures. There's a lot of books where there are pictures of your father, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in this, the Charles Berlitz book, the Roswell incident. I think there's some pictures in there. And then, of course, the UFO crash at Roswell. You know that book, right?
Yeah. I know there's been a plethora of books written on it, but I thought, I wanted to get one out that I wrote that, what the book does for me, it gives more of a background for my dad. It tells people that he knew what he was doing because his background training in radar school and intelligence school and all that. He was not one guy. He was not a guy to make up stories, and that he really was factual and well trained.
So when he was told to lie, your father, or say, "Hey, this is what," I mean, he went along with it because he was a good soldier, but
right.
He must have had some, you know, some regrets or some, you know, he must have suspected something was off. Right.
Oh, I'm sure he did, you know, but he was kind of, you know, we never really talked about that, and I'm not sure just how deeply he was hurt by this. Maybe he was hurt deeper than I thought, but he tried not to let it interfere with his life.
Where was he in World War II, your father?
He was in the in the South Pacific, and after he came back, he was... Then with the 509th Bomb Group, and those are the guys who dropped the bomb on Japan.
Oh, right. They were in Roswell at the time, right?
Yeah, that's right. The 509th Bomb Group, a composite group there, and he was an intelligence officer with the 509th. And those are all hand-picked guys for their intelligence and so forth and training.
Did you ever talk to Edgar Mitchell? He grew up in Roswell about this.
Yeah, he sure did. I saw him not too long ago.
Did you know him when you were growing up?
No, that was, that didn't cross.
Oh, because he's about your age, I would say,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Yeah, huh. We might have gone to the same school together. Who knows, as far as I know, but I don't recall.
But he's just come out about the government cover-up of UFOs, right?
Well, yeah, he was with NASA, so he kind of had to be a little closed about this thing, too. But I guess, you know, he figures it's time to talk about it, let people know what's going on out there.
Yeah, so he just came out. He was on Larry King. He was all over the place or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
yeah.
So I wonder if he was asked by part of the government to come out and start to slowly reveal the stuff. I mean,
well, it's an interesting thought. Maybe so. That's certainly possible.
Or maybe it's just like you. It's in the collective consciousness. Maybe it's just time. It came out.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, like I said, I'm no spring chicken. I'm 72 years old, and I don't know how much longer I have, but I want to get my part of the story out while I'm still good.
So what do you hope people get from your book? What would you like them to come away with knowing?
Well, you know, that the truth of the Roswell event, that, you know, the fact that my dad was deeply involved with it, that he knew what he was talking about. I gave him, in the book, there's parts of his resume. You know, he was a member of the 509th, handpicked to be an intelligence officer. He went to radar school. He went to intelligence school. As a matter of fact, he taught at the Air Force Intelligence School. And so he was not given to wild imagination, and that the Roswell event really happened, that it's parts of, like you said, a flying saucer coming from some other place, not of human manufacture. And that's what I wanted to put in the book, plus a little bit of science of space travel, you know, how it's possible to manipulate space to travel faster than the so-called speed of light and things like that. And that's basically what the book is all about.
Right, so it's a vindication of your father, in a way. It's a value.
Vindication, right, so that's a good word. I was searching for it, and you got it.
Yeah, it's about his integrity. He seemed like
yeah.
He was a very decent person.
Well, he was.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah, and you can feel that in you. You know, you're also standing up for the truth, the way, you know, in your own way, you know?
Well, you know, I think, you know, since I was part of the story, I'm from the ground zero, so to speak, and I just, again, wanted to get this story out while I still could.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you coming forward and doing it, and you know, you're probably one of the few people who have actually touched material from an alien craft, you know? I mean,
I'm sure other people have touched it, because it's somewhere, you know? They didn't take it to a dumpster.
It probably is somewhere, but did you feel anything weird going back to that time? Did you feel anything strange, electric, or anything?
No, not anything at all. You know, I've been asked if they did they have a strange odor to it, which it didn't. You know, just, you know, if you didn't know any better, you'd say, well, just a bunch of junk there. But when you looked at it, you realize that, hey, no, what is this? You know, there's apparently metal, if you folded it, it would unfold. And I didn't see that part, but my dad described that part. And
described it to you when, after?
Later.
Oh, years later he described
yeah.
it. So, I mean, basically, your father was pretty affected by this whole event, it seems, right?
Well, you know, I do know that in 1950, he got out of the Air Force. He suddenly said, I've had enough of this, I'm getting out. So he got out, and that's when the Korean War was just getting off the ground.
And what did he do when he got out?
Well, he went back to Louisiana to be with his mother, and He went to Leesville, Louisiana, where he became a radio and television repairman.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
But he wanted
to go back home.
And you were already grown up doing your own thing at that moment.
Well, I was in high school then, so I was still at home, and I graduated in high school in '54, and then I went to college and medical school, and then I got in the military. Spent 30 years in the military.
Uh-huh, even though your father was, so he never talked to you about being, why you got sick of, fed up with the military, huh?
No. Again, he kept that close to his chest.
He did. You did. And your mother, and she was just a good housewife, huh?
Yeah.
And you didn't have any brothers or sisters, huh?
No, I'm it. I was the only child.
Do you have children of your own?
I do have 8 altogether, so.
8 of your own? And what do they think of this whole story?
Well, you know, they're scared of it. I guess they accept what it is now, but when initially you found out about it, they were kind of frightened over the implication of this.
The implication being.
But they're all grown up now, so they accept it and not afraid of it.
But it really does open up the whole world to a whole new reality, is what I call it, you know.
It is. It's a new reality. It's just, we're not alone. By golly, the universe has a lot of people out there, so to speak.
Well, I think it's very exciting.
We have a lot of cousins out there.
Well, I think once this is publicly acknowledged, we will then perhaps welcome them. They won't have to be hiding. I mean, somehow, if this is publicly acknowledged, it's going to change everything about our culture, about science, about health, I mean, medicine. Just think of the technology you must have.
Yeah, it'll be a paradigm shift in our way of thinking.
Absolutely. This is one of the reasons I'm doing this program, is to bring forth this knowledge and to talk to people like you that say, without a doubt, this is real, they're out there, it's true, it's very exciting for me.
People ask me, well, why don't these, our cousins, so to speak, officially contact us, you know, like landing on the White House lawn, or so to speak, or Buckingham Palace. And, I think what it is, we're basically an uncivilized, you know, this is my thought, maybe not totally true, but we're kind of uncivilized. You know, we're too warlike.
Right.
And I think that maybe they have more to fear from us than we do from them.
Right. That's Stanton Friedman's great line. You know, they don't want to be around humans whose main occupation is tribal warfare.
Yeah, tribal warfare, exactly. We're just too involved in. That's the history of human civilization, is war. And it's disgusting.
It is the history of human civilization. And, you know, I think, you know, something's got to change. We've had enough of war.
Yeah. Well, maybe if they were to make contact, that would make us settle our own differences, like President Reagan alluded to when in a United Nations address one time.
All right. That was a great, possible foreshadowing of the future. So you have anything else planned, Jess, coming up after mean for yourself?
No, not at all. I just retired, and I'm just kind of collecting my thoughts and just trying to enjoy life.
I mean, are you looking at other UFO Roswell information, or are you going on tour?
Not really. I just, you know, I'm interested in astronomy and cosmology because I realize that there's inhabitable planets out there, habitable planets. So that's my hobby, is astronomy.
I mean, where do you think they're from then? This. I mean, probably more than one group, but where do you think some of them are?
Yeah, well, I guess we're looking. You know, there's a SETI program that's listening for signals, and our telescopes are just now getting refined enough to where maybe we can spot some Earth-like planets and do some studies of the atmosphere, see if there's organic life there. We're just now getting to the point where we haven't got there yet, though, but in the next decade we'll have telescopes to find out to spot Earth-like planets.
I mean, I always thought it was ridiculous to have a SETI program when it's obvious that the government knows about this, and why are we looking for...
Yeah, that's Stan's argument, but that's okay. You know, I support the SETI program.
I support it, too, but it just seems insane. Oh, we're looking for and it's right here under your nose. It's probably not coming in the form of signals that we want it to come. But, well, hey, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me on your realities.
You know, if people are interested in the book, they can get an autographed one from jessemarceausenior.com. That's our website. Or they get it on Amazon and other places, too. But that's where it's located.
Right, and the book is called The Roswell Legacy, and it's published by New Page Books.
Yes, Career Press.
Career Press, and it's Jesse Marcel Jr. and Linda.
Oh, yeah, Jesse Marcel Jr. and Linda.
And Linda, your wife.
Yes,
Yeah, I know, she has a nice little piece in there. What's her final word on the whole thing? Your wife?
Well, stay tuned. That's all I got to say.
Thank you so much, Jesse, for telling your story and writing the book and really being there, confirming what people suspected all along, that this is real and, the government knows something they're not telling us, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. I don't think we need to know everything that the government knows, but I think there are certain things that should be divulged, and this is one of them.
I personally think we do need to know everything the government knows. Why not? They're working for us. It's our government,
Well, as far as intelligence and methods of security, I think weaponry, I think we don't need to know about that.
Maybe, but it didn't stop people last time, all that secrecy. Right?
Yeah, I know.
Well, thanks again. I've been talking to Jesse Marcel Jr., who's the author of The Roswell Legacy, the son of Jesse Marcel Sr., who actually found the wreckage in Roswell, brought it back, and the legend began. So
that's where it started.
That's where it started. It hasn't ended yet. Okay. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you this program will be archived at newrealities.com and also on bbsradio.com under New Realities. You can listen to this. And if you have any questions, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I'm going to end with this song called The Night Before the Future, by Duke Williams, who had his own contact with
on the hour before tomorrow. Rest today. Lay back.